some ways would prohibit him from purchasing these weapons.
FBI Director James Comey says the Bureau is looking into Omar Mateen's motives. The police chief in Orlando confirmed Mateen had pledged allegiance to ISIS.
There was an allegiance to the Islamic State. There was no laughing as far as our negotiations were involved.
That was John Mina, but officials are not sure if ISIS directed the attack. Mateen killed 49 people at a gay club and injured 50 before he was taken out by law enforcement. This is USA Radio News.
I'm Sean Hare, the site director at conservativetribune.com. Conservative Tribune is one of the most visited news sites in the world, and the reason is simple. ConservativeTribune.com delivers edgy and bold commentary of the news every day. We are unapologetically pro-America, unabashedly conservative. At ConservativeTribune.com, we don't make apologies for who we are or what we say. If you're looking for more than boring stories and simple thought, visit ConservativeTribune.com. That's ConservativeTribune.com.
Hamilton was adopted from a rescue in 2008. He really likes to be around people. I get out my mat and I'm doing a downward dog and he's underneath. He's quite the pug about town. He gets invited to a lot of parties. He knows he's a pretty big deal. Look at this little face. I mean, you know, I love him.
Hamilton the Pug, Instagram star and shelter pet. Amazing adoption stories start in shelters. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you. Brought to you by Maddie's Fund, the Humane Society of the United States, and the Ad Council.
Not all victims of the attack at the Pulse have been identified. Florida Attorney General Pam Bondi says her office is still trying to reach families.
I mobilized my entire victims unit, meaning we've had victims advocates who are specially trained in this come in from Miami all the way to the panhandle.
She appeared on Fox News. And the father of jihadist Omar Mateen, Sadiq Mateen, is also speaking out, claiming he was surprised.
This is against the principle of me and the whole family.
But the killer had been to Saudi Arabia 2 times in recent years. He worked as a security guard, and an ex-coworker is speaking out, claiming he was unstable, but supervisors were afraid to fire him because he is Muslim. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump will speak out about the shooting today. Clinton has tweeted about protecting the LGBT community because it happened at a gay club. Trump is saying on social media that the U.S. needs to be tough, smart, and vigilant regarding radical Islam. This is USA Radio News.
Have you been to conservativetribune.com? Now, this is one of the most visited news sites in the entire world, and the reason is simple. Conservativetribune.com delivers edgy and bold commentary of the news. They're unapologetically pro-America, unabashedly conservative. At conservativetribune.com, they don't make apologies for who they are or what they say. And if you're looking for more than just boring stories and simple thought, you go to conservativetribune.com. That's conservativetribune.com.
Many Americans have become wary of the Obama administration's refusal to address the real issue behind shootings like what happened in Orlando. John Clemens reports.
Dr. Ron Beatty of Return America says gun control is not the reason that Muslims kill innocent people. Islamic terrorism is the reason, and we need a president who realizes that.
It doesn't matter what kind of weapon a depraved individual has in their hand, whether it be a knife or a club or a gun. The reaction towards other people is not, first of all, the reaction of the weapon. It's the reaction of the heart.
I'm John Clemens.
Testimony is resuming today in the trial of a Baltimore police officer who drove the van with Freddie Gray in custody. Cesar Goodson is facing a second-degree murder charge because the state is claiming he caused Gray's fatal spinal cord injury last year by giving him an unseat-belted rough ride in a police transport vehicle. Oscar Pistorius is being sentenced this week for the 2013 shooting death of his girlfriend Reva Steenkamp. The South African sprinter is facing a minimum prison term of 15 years. He had argued he thought he was shooting an intruder and had originally been convicted on a lesser charge, which was upgraded to murder by an appeals court. Defense lawyers might ask the court to consider that Pistorius is missing both legs below the knee when handing down the sentence. This is USA Radio News. I'm Kelly Sloan. For more news, we're on the web at usaradio.com.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
Rab Coins of Flemington, New Jersey has been in business for over 37 years. We are highly competitive buyers of gold, silver, and platinum coins, jewelry, and scrap metals, and have recently been named the exclusive gold buyer for Diamond Nation and HealthQuest. We also provide professional appraisal, sales, and liquidation services for individuals, law firms, estate trustees, and bank trust departments in New Jersey and Philadelphia. Products and services include gold and silver, American and foreign coins, certified rare date and modern coins, numismatic supplies and books, gold, silver, and platinum bullion, paper currency, United States proof, and mint sets, including current issues. From junior collector to the experienced investor, Rab Coins has been for numismatists since 1974. Founder and owner, Randy Block, an expert numismatist, has been an active member of the coin industry for over 45 years. Visit us at 56 Main Street in historic downtown Flemington or call toll-free 1-800-819-9875.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weichert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
The weather today is mostly sunny with a high near 77. Northwest winds 11 to 14 miles an hour. Tonight it'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 52 with northwest winds 6 to 8 miles an hour. Tuesday, it'll be sunny with a high near 79, northwest winds 7 to 9 miles an hour, and Tuesday night, partly cloudy with a low around 54. Wednesday, it'll be mostly sunny with a high near 84 and calm winds becoming northwest 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. Wednesday night, there's a chance of showers after 2 a.m. It'll be mostly cloudy with a low around 61. Thursday is a chance of showers. Thursday night, a chance of showers. Friday, a chance of showers, but it'll partly sunny with a high near 78 on Friday. I guess that's in between the showers. It'll be partly sunny. But so that's your weather, folks. Enjoy it best you can.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat. Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Good afternoon and welcome. This hour is the Hunterdon Medical Center's hour. Compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we are very privileged today to have with us Dr. Brian Sperling. I will let Dr. Sperling tell you what he does and all that good, happy stuff. Dr. Sperling, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm here as a urologist in the community from Hunterdon Urological Associates. And this month is June, Men's Health Month, so we're going to speak about men's health and all the issues surrounding that, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, whether you like it or not. Doctor, I ask everybody who comes on, not only this show, but the show before that I do, how did you get in this kind of work? I mean, did you always want to be a doctor? Or I tell you, it's funny because sometimes people say, well, I wanted to do it since I was a little kid. And I think that's great, you know. And others say, I had two kids and a mortgage, and a job came along, you know. And that was pretty much me. I had four kids, a mortgage, car payment, you know, real estate taxes. And so, but I stayed in the job for almost 20 years. So, but I was just curious. So I'm curious how you get it, how people get into their various lines of work.
Well, for me, it was something I always took things apart and put them back together. So it was either an engineer or a doctor. And, the human body became fascinating to me, so I got into that. And then once I was in medical school, I became fascinated with the idea of urology. And mm-hmm. urology is very complex, but it's a nice specialty in terms of quality of life. So it's really about improving people's health and well-being. We don't deal with too much death and dying, although there are certainly some, and I deal with several oncologic or cancer problems. You know, conditions of the mm-hmm. kidney, the bladder, the prostate, of course, which we'll talk about a little bit more. But it is a specialty that allows me to be a surgeon and fix things while at the same time getting to take care of people for a long time.
Okay.
So I build a relationship with that. So that's right. What really drew me into urology.
Okay. That's cool. You know, you said June is mental health, men's health month.
Yes.
May is Mental Health Month.
Yes.
I never realized June was Men's Health Month. Evidently, it's not publicized a great deal.
Well, men like it that way.
Yeah.
No, Men's Health Month came about several years ago, and there are a lot of pushes across the country to develop programs surrounding men's health. There's always been a kind of a misunderstanding that everything in medicine is about men, but it's not. And men, if they had their druthers, would avoid the doctors and avoid
those. Some do.
Some are very good at it. Believe me, I know. But the truth is that men between the ages of 18 and 50 don't really have a reason to go to the doctor. We don't have a recurring appointment schedule. Women see their GYN typically right. once a year right. for annual checks. Men don't really have that. So when they either go into the military or go to college or get their first job, they have a physical exam, 18 to 22 years of age. And then they don't think about going to the doctor again until they turn 50 for their PSAs, their colonoscopy, and other checks. So we have basically a 30-year gap, mm-hmm. and a lot of things can happen in 30
right.
years. And Men's Health Month and men's health in general is about raising the awareness of the issues that high blood pressure is silent. You don't know. Diabetes is silent. You don't know about it. These are things that can occur, and you don't realize it until you're too far gone. And by the time you get back in touch with your physician at the age of 50, well, shoot, you're sick, and you just didn't realize it.
Right.
You know, there's many issues beyond just the two that I mentioned there that we need to touch base with men and make sure that they're in the system. It's not that they have to go to the doctor every year, every other year or even beyond that. It's just being aware of their health problems and getting screened and checked on a
regular
basis.
Well, it wouldn't hurt to
visit.
Go every couple of years.
Absolutely. I think that you should go every year.
Yeah, every year.
If not every year, every other year. And there's even some debate in medicine whether or not they need to be seen every year. But you certainly need to get your blood pressure checked.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt.
No, it doesn't hurt.
You know.
But just making sure. But a lot of men don't want to go to the doctor. So if you make it easy, and that's what Men's Health Month is about. It's about figuring out a way to make it easy for men to get the care that they should be getting.
Right.
Should they be going to the doctor once a year? Probably. Are they going to? Probably not. So we need to figure out a way that we can get them to at least be checking on their own health other than saying, oh, okay, I'll go to the gym once a week or twice a week. You should be going five times a week or working out really 150 minutes a week. So it's 30 minutes a day. So, you know, having them check their blood pressure, having them get their cholesterol checked, which of course you would go to the doctor for. But,
right.
You know, these are the things that it's really important to start to hit home because they run into more problems down the road. And then as you get older, checking your PSA for prostate health. You know, as a urologist, obviously the prostate's an organ that's near and dear to my heart because I have to check it all the time. But there's been a lot of debates in the literature, and I think that there's a lot of confusion around should you be screened, should you not be screened, how should screening be done. And every day we're inundated with information about doing this, not doing that. I should be eating this. I should not be eating that.
Right.
And I think keeping it simple and simplifying it and bringing it to everybody is really the way that we're going to be successful at reducing some preventable diseases and illnesses and causes of early death.
It's ironic because I've been going to my general practitioner for years now. And it was because of his screening that he recommended I go see a urologist. And it's a little funny story I'll tell you about it.
Sure.
He was watching my screening over a period of years, and it was going up a little bit, going up a little bit, going up. I think it hit four or something that he said, you guys should go to the urologist to check it out. So I didn't know a urologist. I mean, so I looked in a phone book and I picked one out that was local and I went. And when I went in, they said, do you want to see Dr. X or Dr. Y? I says, no. Why? I don't care. Whichever one's available, doesn't matter. So I'm sitting on the little thing they have there where you guys do the examination. And I'm in my, down in my underwear and just,
sure.
They got this thing
the
over
gown.
Me.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sitting there in a gown and in walks this young woman. I'm thinking she's a nurse. So, Mr. Cartwright, would you want to take the gown off and turn around? And I was like shocked. I still go to her though, but it's just,
I know who she is.
Yeah. she moved down to Princeton now, but you know who I mean?
Yeah, I know.
Okay. But it was just ironic, and she did the examination and she felt that I should get,
a biopsy.
A biopsy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course they found cancer and the, so I went to the medical center and the doctor there that was, and he says, you really, it's such an early stage. You shouldn't really have to have surgery. He says, you might want to think about seed implants. So he called Dr. Dan in Princeton, who is now up here at a medical center too.
Sure. I know who he is.
You know who he is also, right? And that's what I had done.
Great.
And that's been 7 years now. And I go once
and
a year to,
well.
I go once a year Good. To my female urologist and, but I figured I started with her.
Absolutely.
And, I didn't know anybody. I mean, let's face it. Most, like you say, most men, what do I know about urology?
Right.
You know?
They come for their vasectomy.
Yeah. And that's it, but I never even did that. It was just, that's why I got four kids, but
yeah.
But anyway, it was just, I just thought it was funny because I was sitting, I must have turned white as a sheet, because here I thought, she's a nurse, she's going to take my blood pressure or something,
right.
Oh, God, you know. But it is.
It's important to get.
It is important because without going, if I didn't go, who knows what would have happened or right. how far it would have went or what the outcome would be.
Sure.
You know, I have a good friend of mine who passed away from prostate cancer because he waited too long and they couldn't do anything, you know, after.
After a certain while. Yeah. yeah once it's outside of the gland.
Right.
And that's sort of the big debate because we are in a process right now where we realize with the PSA screening, we actually pick up more prostate cancers than we probably need to treat. And so what people have said is that, no, maybe we shouldn't be screening because we're finding too many cancers and too many men are being treated or tested and they don't necessarily need it. So,
but if they have cancer, don't they need it? I mean, you
so that's an interesting question because a lot of men with prostate cancer, we now know, depending on what age they're diagnosed. Now, you certainly were diagnosed at a younger age, but certain men at a certain age, prostate cancer is so slow growing that it, in a lot of cases, we can actually just watch it. And we don't need to go through radiation or surgery or any of these other treatments that are available. Certainly, there are men who need to be treated. And the problem with not screening is you miss that section of men who need it to be treated.
Right.
We have learned that we can now watch more comfortably, and sometimes it's just a delay in treatment, so you watch them for a little bit, and then we treat once it becomes a more aggressive tumor. But to bury our heads in the sand, which men are more than happy to do, does not make good practical sense. And what we're going to probably see in the next couple of years, and this is sort of a guess, if we really get away from the screening, we're going to start diagnosing men more like your friend, unfortunately, who got diagnosed too late,
right.
And the disease is outside of the prostate, at which point it's treatable but not curable. And that's really what we want to avoid because mm-hmm. we might not necessarily need to treat everybody every time, but certainly we don't want to miss that guy who needs to be treated. And that's, in all right. my mind, the most important thing about screening.
Right. My ignorance on the subject, to put it bluntly.
That's what I'm here for.
Wouldn't it make more sense to find out, like myself, all right, they said it was a early stage, but it was cancer.
Sure.
You know, and it could grow, and it would grow eventually, but they got rid of it before it grew.
Right.
Okay. Wouldn't that make more, I mean, just off the record, wouldn't that make more sense than not doing it?
Well, we're on the record, so it does make sense to treat prostate cancer found, but not everybody needs to be treated right away.
Okay.
So I'll just give a random example. This is nobody specific. I'm just
– right.
So let's say I have a 73-year-old patient who comes in with an elevated PSA. My threshold for testing him is going to be a little bit different than my 50-year-old patient who comes in the door. And when I test him, if I find out it's prostate cancer, there's three grades of prostate cancer, low, intermediate, and high, for simplification purposes. My intermediate and high grade cancers are the ones that we really need to pay attention to and probably mm-hmm. need to treat. We now know from big studies that if those low risk prostate cancers are truly low risk, and we now have some genetic tests that are available, which we haven't had, you know,
right.
7 years ago when you were diagnosed, they weren't available. They're really only the last 2-3 years that we have genetic tests specifically for prostate cancer and specifically the cancer that you have. So we take the cells from the biopsy and we look at the genetics of it and we could say this is an aggressive cancer, or hey, you know what? This cancer says that you're probably not going to die from this disease. So back to my 73-year-old example, if he comes in, he's got a low-grade prostate cancer, am I going to put somebody like that through a surgery? Probably not, because the risks of surgery may outweigh. But if he's a high grade, maybe the risks of surgery do outweigh the risk of dying of prostate cancer.
Sure.
And it's a very gray area in medicine. It's one of the more frustrating things from a urologist standpoint, obviously, because it's what we treat, is knowing which man needs to be treated and which man we can watch. Also, we have to convince men that it's okay to watch. And some men are not okay with it, and then we treat them. But a lot of men are, because of the side effects that come along with surgery and the side effects that can come along with radiation, they want to know, you know, what are their alternatives. So we have swung the other way and given them the option of watching it, if it, again, is a cancer that is mm-hmm. safe to watch. If somebody comes in with lots of medical comorbidities, high blood pressure, diabetes, not able to breathe well, it was something called COPD, do I need to treat that person, or is something else going to affect their lifespan greater than the prostate cancer? And the answer often is yes.
Okay.
So, and that's the other thing with the Men's Health Month, is not just awareness. Sometimes people believe it's all about prostate and prostate cancer and erectile dysfunction. We'll talk about that a little bit later in the show. The idea of knowing the numbers, knowing what your cholesterol is, knowing what your blood pressure is, these are probably more important, and knowing, you know, your blood sugar levels, these are probably more important in terms of the overall health mm-hmm. of the men in our community and the, all over the world. That's more important than, you know, say, the PSA or prostate. Doesn't mean we don't screen it and don't look at it.
Right.
But understanding the what most people are dying from and what most people are getting sick from and where all the cost in our system is coming from. And I'm not even going to go into cost in the system. That's not the subject matter today. But it's really, you know, men die younger than women. Why? There's a couple of reasons, but we want to figure out how to prevent that.
Right.
And change that. We should all die together.
It wouldn't be a bad idea.
Right. You know? Well, I mean, not all at the same time.
No, I understand what you're saying.
I don't want to go.
No, but, I understand.
But, I mean, you know, we should be living around the same amount of time.
Right.
You know, from what we have in terms of our health standard in our society today. And we need to really do a better job of keeping an eye on ourselves and taking responsibility for our own health and involving a doctor in our care so that we understand. Half of my job is to educate, diagnose, and then educate the patient on their condition and what they can do to make themselves better.
If someone has an operation, whether it's seed implants like I had mm-hmm. or an actual
removal,
mm-hmm. What are the side effects of that?
It depends. For radiation, and I'm going to lump radiation all together. So the two types of radiation that can be delivered, there's external beam is what, when we don't put anything in, or seeds, or brachytherapy, which is what you had done, which is the seed implant is basically a little radioactive pellet that gets inserted in special places in the prostate. It's pre-mapped, done in the operating room, and that delivers the radiation over a short period of time. And a very high dose, killing the cancer. External beam is delivered in a couple of different modalities, but the most common nowadays is something called IMRT, which is intensity modulated radiation therapy, essentially allowing for a high dose of radiation to be delivered to the prostate without potential injury to the rectum and or the bladder. It allows for the proximity to be localized to the prostate versus the mm-hmm. bladder and the rectum. The side effects that occur at that point are injury to the bladder, which would be radiation cystitis or radiation poisoning to the bladder.
Right.
Irritative voiding, bleeding, things like that. Same thing with the rectum, irritative pooping or defecation, we call it, and so forth and so on. Long term, you know,
what would it be like, what do you call it, like if you get the word just totally went out of my head. That's what happens when you get old.
Right. So a urinary, it would be similar to a urinary tract
infection. That's what I was trying, like a urinary tract infection.
See,
that's
reading your mind.
Yeah, there you go. That's I'd have you around more often.
Just keep me in your pocket. So the radiation cystitis, yes, it could be, but it could be also be much worse. Thankfully, those complications are rare. But they do occur, and they tend to occur not right away, but down the road.
Down the road.
We also worry if we're radiating someone who's really young, you know, they've got 20 more years, 30, 40, 50 more years of life, depending on how old they are when they get radiation, the secondary effects of having a dose of radiation to the pelvis, because, again, the bladder and the rectum are there.
Right.
There's, you know, the normal cells are going to be hit by the radiation a little bit. So that gives us some concern as well for a secondary cancer, usually 20, 25, 30 years down the road. Again, rare, but it has to be part of the thought process.
Right.
Erectile dysfunction and incontinence, the way that the changes occur in the body with radiation, you can run into erectile dysfunction because the nerves going to the penis are right next to the prostate. Incontinence because the muscles that control your ability to urinate are also right in that vicinity. There's a lot very close together in the mm-hmm. pelvis there. Surgically speaking, we have the same risks, incontinence and impotence, impidence being erectile dysfunction.
Right.
They occur more often immediately postoperatively, but they get better with time. So it's a little bit of an interesting dichotomy. Certainly the surgery is a much more aggressive approach, but in certain cancers it's indicated that's a better approach because you're going to get better cure.
Well, with the erectile dysfunction that occurs, say, like day or two after the surgery or whenever close to it, would there the was it Viagra that they advertise?
Sure.
Would that help? Or?
It can, depending on it. So if the nerves are able to be spared, and now we have the robotics, so we're able to do a much more finer surgery. We were able to do nerve-sparing surgery even open. But if you're able to spare the nerves, meaning that the cancer is contained enough that you can get the nerves away from the danger field, and they're able to be saved, then if you had erectile function before, there's a good chance you're going to get 80 to 90% of that back. Now, if the cancer is big enough and kind of affecting the nerves and you have to take the nerves, then your chances of being able to get your own erection are pretty small.
Mm-hmm.
But again, there's three things we look at. We call it the trifecta of prostate care. And did we get the cancer?
Yeah.
Okay. Did we maintain your continence? And did we maintain your potency? And what I tell patients is, if I don't do the first one, the second two don't matter.
Exactly.
And we can fix the second two typically with another type of procedure. And not that that's what we're looking for. But if the cancer is significant enough that we need to get it out, then that should be our priority. And kind of,
right.
You know, as long as they understand and have the reasonable expectation of what their erectile function will be afterwards and what their continence rate will be afterwards. And the continence rate has gotten a lot better, I think, with the robotics.
Mm-hmm. Okay. When someone comes to you and say you don't feel that procedure is necessary, but they do, do you run into that sometimes?
Sure. Well, I try to be very careful. I try to be a coach in that regard. I will take them first up in a hot air balloon in a 30,000 foot view. Well, 30,000 feet in a hot air balloon might be bad. Okay. So maybe 10,000 feet.
10,000 feet would be about right.
Yeah. So take a 10,000.
Haven't been up in one. Yeah.
10,000 foot view of what their cancer means to them, their longevity, all the picture together. And then go over all of the options, whether it's active surveillance, radiation, the different options in radiation, whether it's surgery, whether it's some more minimally invasive approaches that we're doing nowadays that are coming more into favor, where we are now really focused on individual lesions because we're getting better at detecting where exactly the cancer mm-hmm. is through MRI and fusion
right.
and technology. If we're able to deliver a focalized or localized care to the prostate, then we have an added benefit of not causing some of these side effects. But I'm very cautious about not telling the patient what they need to do. I'm telling them what they can do.
Can do.
What are your options? And then I give them all the risks and benefits of everything. And then as they hone down their decision-making process, I really want them to spend time to think about it because each person's an individual.
Right.
Some people have the mindset that if there's cancer in my prostate, I don't want my prostate anymore. Even if they could do just fine with radiation and would have equal outcomes,
mm-hmm.
they may, in their head, say, look, you're telling me I have an organ that has cancer. I don't want that organ in my body anymore. I'm not going to argue with them. They understand the risks and differences between the cases. They're going to choose that. But I'm very careful not to tell them what they need, especially with prostate cancer. Unless there, again, is a definitive, and very rarely in prostate cancer, is, look, you absolutely need this.
Right.
Nothing else will treat you but this.
It's ironic because when I went to the medical center, at a cancer center there, the doctor I saw, he felt that in my case, it would be easier to have the seed implants than it would be to have the operation. And he didn't feel it was necessary to operate because the cancer was so in such early stages. And I, you know, I wasn't thrilled about an operation anyway.
Sure. And every person, and as you said, every person's an individual.
Sure.
So,
and when I listen, when I talk to the doctor who, you know, down in
your
Princeton.
Your urologist, yeah.
Yeah. And when they referred me to the doctor that did this, did the seed implants,
yep.
And I spoke to him twice, you know, he said the same thing like you're saying. Well, it's your choice. You know, you can get it removed. He says, personally, I don't see why he would remove it at this point because it's so minute. But you caught it so early, or they caught it so early.
Right.
So, I don't know. I felt that it was, I don't have to have an operation. All I have to do is go in the operating room. They insert these things, and I'm half awake half the time when they're doing it, you know.
Right.
Or at least I thought I would be half awake. I wound up being out. But
we don't like you to remember that.
Yeah. I remember talking to the nurse, and the next thing I know, it was over. You know,
yeah, you're that's in recovery room.
Yeah, right, exactly. But, you know, it just I thought that, you know, weighing everything, yeah, they made it my decision.
Right, and should be. It should be an individualized decision.
As long as you have all the information.
That's right.
And, you know,
and that's my job and the radiation oncologist's job. And, you know, when I present it to them, I try to speak to what the radiation oncologist is going to speak to them about without getting into specifics. I do, again, the 10,000-foot view. I can't tell them, you know, their absolute risk of this type of radiation toxicity versus that one.
Right.
But I know how the radiation works. I know how it's treated. And I know what, in general, we worry about. Because I see, you know, when there's a problem with radiation, I generally see it. Because I'm going to be the one who's going to figure out how to take care of it. And, you know, obviously with the surgery, I'm the one who takes care of that. But the key is, you know, each person's an individual. You can have a 600-pound man, you know, am I going to treat him with surgery? Probably not. You know, he's got bigger issues, obviously, if he's 600 pounds. But,
exactly.
You know, if they've had multiple abdominal surgeries, you know, say they have some bowel disorder or something like that where they've had multiple surgeries in their belly and it becomes a little bit more complicated for them to have any type of surgery, then radiation makes more sense. And each person, again, like you've said already, is an individual.
Yeah.
You got it. As long as you have the information that you can make a good informed decision with, that's important.
Now, I know we mentioned this, I believe, but when do you feel men should start getting a prostate exam, and how often?
So the PSA recommendations have gone back and forth. What we know, the best knowledge that we have today, and tomorrow it could change. But the people who are most at risk, if we're being perfectly honest, are the people who at baseline have greater than a 1.5 PSA. Now, that baseline should be done somewhere around 40 to 45. Now, there may be people listening to this that get completely freaked out, saying, oh, my God, my PSA was 1.6, and now he's telling me that I have cancer. No, nothing like that. No, not at all. We just know from large-scale 40, 50,000, 60,000 people studies that the men who seem to get it, and these may be men who are being screened more regularly, are men whose PSAs are above 1.5 at baseline. So I think the baseline really should be done between the ages of 40 and 45.
Okay.
If you're above 1.5, you probably fall into a category that needs to be screened more regularly. If you're below 1.5 and you don't have a family history of it, you could probably hold off every 5 years or so. Once you're at the age of 50, probably should be screened every year or every other year. Again, depending on how much it's changing. Once you hit the age of 75, or what I like to tell patients, if I look at you, and in my best medical knowledge, I don't think you're going to make it another 10 years. then I'm probably not going to screen you.
Right.
Because prostate cancer truly is, even in an aggressive form, it's slow. And there's a good chance you're going to die of something else. So to put you through all this other testing and all the potential risks that come from that doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Right.
But I, again, back to my point of not putting our heads in the sand, when the USPSTF came out with a recommendation saying we don't need to screen, I think men stood up and cheered, yay, I don't have to go to the doctor. Whereas women, when that same recommendation was made about mammograms, they stood up and fought. And lo and behold, that recommendation was changed. So it just becomes a, you know, getting men to the doctor and having a discussion. And that's what the recommendations are, to have a discussion about the test and understanding it. All the screening that they talk about is like me hanging up a sign and saying, prostate cancer screening today. That's different than somebody coming to me and saying, oh, I get up three times at night and I pee, which is an enlargement issue typically, an enlargement of the prostate, which has nothing to do with cancer. But for that patient, I'll usually get them a screening test just to make sure. You know, we don't want to miss something, certainly. But that's another issue that we talk about with Men's Health Month. Oh, it's normal to get up and go four times a night. No, it's not. And it's normal to, you know, stand at the urinal while three or four guys go by you at the ball game. No, it's not. The strength of your stream and the inability to empty your bladder completely, in and of itself, not a big deal unless it starts to back up, give you infections, or back up and hurt your kidneys. So I'm transitioning a little bit into benign prostate disease here, but being able to urinate well.
What about retaining water?
There's a slight difference. So there's retention of urine, which is where the urine doesn't leave the bladder, which could affect the kidneys. There's retaining water where your ankles swell.
That's me.
So retaining water when your ankles swell is usually more of a heart and kidney issue, more than a bladder storage issue.
That's why they have me on water pills. So.
That's right. Yeah. So the water pills help draw that fluid out. It helps your kidneys take that fluid out of circulation, if you will, and put them into the bladder. My job, or the urologist's job, is to recognize that I need to make sure that your bladder is able to
handle it.
Handle that capacity and get rid of the excess capacity
because
you can actually get kidney damage if your bladder's not emptying completely.
Right.
Urinary urgency, frequency, all these things happen to men as well, and usually when they age. The getting up three times at night to pee is bad. You lose sleep, and then as you get into the even older population, the fall risk goes up a lot. Because, you know, now you're trying to stumble from your bed to the bathroom, and men fall, break their hips, or worse. It's important that it's just because it happens to a lot of men doesn't mean it's normal, and it doesn't mean that it has to just be the way it is.
When
we can improve their ability to urinate so they don't get up three times at night, well, you know, then they're much more awake during the day and they're feeling better and more vigorous.
Right.
And they're able to do
They don't have to take a nap at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, right?
That's right. And they have more activity.
Yeah, I'm serious.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
And along with the taking the nap in the afternoon, you know, being aware that the more sedentary lifestyle we have and the obesity epidemic that we're dealing with, we've had a big shift in our testosterone. It's all over the, marketing wise. It's being advertised a lot. Oh, low T this, low T that. There's some truth and reality to it. And not every person needs testosterone replacement just because they sleep in the afternoon. But understanding that if your testosterone is low, well, there's probably a reason behind it. And very rarely is that reason that you've got a tumor in your brain that's causing your testosterone to be low. It's usually lifestyle or obesity or diabetes or elevated blood pressure that's causing what we call the metabolic syndrome that's causing these problems. And, I counsel my patients if I'm going to start them, say they have low testosterone and everything else checks out okay, I usually have the conversation, look, I'm going to give you 6 months. Here's your goal weight. I want you to be able to do this many push-ups, this many sit-ups. Obviously, I'm a little tongue-in-cheek with that, but the key is when I give you, if I'm going to give you a medicine that's going to give you your energy boost or give you some of the things you feel like you're losing, well, then do something with them.
Mm-hmm.
Be proactive now about your life, because so often I find that men just, isn't there a pill for this? Isn't there a pill for that? And we really, as a society, need to get away from that a little bit. Yes, there is oftentimes a pill for this and a pill for that. Boy, wouldn't it be nice if you didn't need to take a pill? And, you know, younger guys, when they come to me and they're on one pill, maybe not a big deal. But as you go from one to two to three to six to eight, all these things start to interact. And our chemistry is just not made up to have all this regulating, upregulating.
All of a sudden you get high blood pressure, cholesterol, and you start taking these, you know.
Right.
And, you know, I know I can. But what are you mentioned some of the side effects. Is there more side effects to low
low testosterone?
I'll say it.
Low testosterone.
You know what I mean.
So, yeah. So there's actually, if you go online, and it's all over the place, it's called the ADAM, A-D-A-M, androgen deprivation in the aging male. And it's basically a 10-point questionnaire. And you need three of them, because if you look at any of them, you're going to be tired. And I should have brought the list so I could read it here.
Yeah.
But the key is, you know, are you sleepy during the day? Are you falling? My favorite is, are you falling asleep after dinner? Well, I don't know many people who don't fall asleep after dinner at some point. But it's like right after dinner is what they're mentioning. Loss of desire to do things, especially sexual things, sexual activity. So decreased libido is one of them. Decreased ability to do physical activity that you maybe used to do. And certainly, to a certain extent, you're going to get a lot of these anyway as you get older.
Older, sure.
It's just when among your peer group, you may be lower than some of the other guys and you end up, you're more tired than you used to be not too long ago. These things should happen, you know, that if it's natural aging process, these things should really happen quite slowly over time. I mean, I've got my 83-year-old guys that come in from the golf course and, you know, I get my annual prostate check and I high-five them and we talk and we see how they were shooting for the day. But you know, they're out there, they're walking a lot of the course and they're really getting their exercise. So for those guys, am I really worried about load? No, of course not. But there are guys that come in and they're, I just have no interest in doing this or doing that and I'm sleepy all the time. You know, I screen them for the basics like sleep apnea, for thyroid issues and other things, but I check their testosterone level. And if it's low, and again, all these other things check out, then we replace it, get them up to a normal level. And I'm not looking for them to be Hulk Hogan or anybody like that.
Right.
But I want them to have normal testosterone. Of course, there's risks with replacing testosterone that I counsel them on, whether it's, you know, the blood getting too thick or, you know, PSA becoming more elevated. Now, there's sometimes a misconception that testosterone causes prostate cancer, and it doesn't.
Okay.
But it can increase the growth of prostate cancer if it's already there. And, you know, testosterone replacement has come under fire a little bit recently in the concerns of whether it increases risk for cardiovascular problems such as a heart attack or a stroke. The data didn't mine out, and the actual data that brought that
right
to the mainstream press was actually a pretty poor trial that's been pretty well torn apart by multiple different societies,
mm-hmm,
whether it's the Endocrine Society, the American Urologic Association, and the American Society for Men's Health. And we've been pretty good about educating the public, or trying to, because actually most of the data says if we get the testosterone into a normal range,
okay,
there actually appears to be a cardiovascular benefit versus the harm that's actually being generated. So I think it is important. Testosterone is important to us for bone deposition, for blood sugar control, for energy metabolism, which goes along with being able to diet and lose weight. So there is a lot of good things with testosterone. So if your testosterone is low or significantly low, should be looked at, because it may help
right
you get over whatever challenges you're trying to, managing your sugars, managing your blood pressure, being able to exercise to get those other things under control. Again,
yeah,
if it's tested and it's low and it's monitored.
Okay. How does erectile dysfunction affect someone's health?
So it's erectile dysfunction is more of a, dare I say, a yardstick for someone's health, we wish. Yeah. But the key here, what I explain to people, is that the vessel – erectile dysfunction is typically a vascular problem. The penis is a vascular organ. The way that an erection works is that the blood flow going in, the artery dilates and actually smushes the veins, preventing the veins from allowing the fluid, the blood, to leave the penis. Simple hydraulics, that chamber fills with blood and you get an erection. When that can't occur because the vessel going in is too damaged or not flexible right. enough to create the erection, then we have to realize that the artery to the penis is actually only 2 millimeters smaller than the main artery to the heart. And growing up in Pennsylvania, we something called the canary in the coal mine. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably know what I'm referring to, is before they had sensitive gas detectors, they used to bring a canary down to the coal right. mines with them. And when the canary fell over because it inhaled toxic gas, everybody left the
everybody
coal mine.
Left.
Because the canary's lungs are obviously smaller than the human's lungs. So we look at erectile dysfunction as potentially the canary in the coal mine. So my conversation always, when somebody comes into me with erectile dysfunction, I'm always looking for the other cardiovascular risk factors, the diabetes, the high blood pressure, the cholesterol, and I'm making sure that before I go ahead and start giving them Viagra or Cialis mm-hmm. or any of the medications, the PDE5 inhibitors we call them, before I give that, we have a conversation. How can you go up the steps without getting chest pain? Can you, making sure that they're not really at risk? And sometimes I'll even say, look, you're not getting that medication today. You need to go get an EKG. You need to see my buddy in cardiology, and we need to check to make sure you're okay. Because, again, that risk is – it's really been shown to be what we call an independent risk factor. So when you think of heart disease, you think of high blood pressure, you think of diabetes, you think of high cholesterol. Well, you also need to think about erectile dysfunction. And it sort of becomes this whole milieu. We used to, 20 years ago, believe that erectile dysfunction was all in our heads. Then, as I call it now, the Viagra era, and I don't mean to tout one drug versus the other. They're all
right.
pretty good.
No, I know what you're saying.
Each one works well. But the key is it's a much more approachable conversation nowadays. So if I talk about erectile dysfunction, it's not as taboo as it used
right.
to be.
Right.
So we have been able to, through that, learn now all of the reasons that this occurs. And it is a vascular problem, and the damage that's caused by blood pressure and diabetes and smoking and alcohol and all these other health-related issues, they play a role. So sometimes the erectile dysfunction is the first thing, again, going back to what I said first, men don't go to the doctor between the ages of 18 and 50
right.
unless they break a bone or their penis doesn't work.
Right.
And so they come to me when their penis stops working. Yeah. And now I got to go, okay, well, you're only 40 years old, and we know there's about 30% of 40-year-olds who have erectile dysfunction.
Right.
And so I have to say to them, well, when was the last time you were to the doctor? Do we know this? Do we know this about you? No. So I all of a sudden have to put on my primary care doctor hat, and I order all these tests, and then I usually send them, hey, this is a great doctor. You should go see him. You know, because I can – look at all those things, but I don't treat them on a regular
right,
enough basis.
Right.
And that's going back to the men's health. I'm actually starting a men's health program here at Hunterdon that's going to be sort of all-inclusive and trying to boost this recognition of prevention and going
is that
to the doctor.
Is that going to be part of the talk you're going to give?
Well, I'll talk about it at the talks. Yeah, so
okay.
I have two talks.
Because you're going to give a talk,
yeah,
right?
I have two talks.
Okay.
I have two talks. One's coming up this Wednesday, and I believe you actually probably have the time for me. I believe this one's at 6 and the next one's at 6:30. But from 6 to 7 at Hunterdon Medical Center, and they'll be able to direct you once you're there. But this week's
going
one
to the auditorium?
It's not in the auditorium.
Okay.
It's going to be meeting rooms A and B, which are
two
large rooms.
Yeah, as soon as you walk in.
A little more intimate gathering.
It's right behind admitting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this week's one is going to be on prostate health. So both enlargement of the prostate, the multiple frequent trips to the bathroom, as well as prostate cancer and prostate cancer treatment and all the things that go along with that. And then on June 29th, I'll be talking, again, I think it's in meeting room A and B, I'll be speaking about sexual health and testosterone at that point. So there's other conditions that go along with erectile dysfunction, such as penile curvature and other problems that occur throughout one's life that we will address at that time. But again, a lot of it will be about testosterone and the not just how to get an erection after you've lost it, but more importantly, recognizing the general, and I'm talking with my hands, of course, I'm on radio, it doesn't help here, the general overall health status and how to improve that to improve your erectile function. And I think that getting those
points. But then what you're saying, high blood pressure.
Diabetes,
high cholesterol.
Low testosterone.
Yeah.
I mean, and these are all things that go along with obesity and smoking and, you know. Now.
Right.
It's important for us to recognize these conditions, address them, and then make improvement on what eventually or what originally brought them to me to begin with.
Right.
Which
right.
was their penis didn't work. So those talks are not just, okay, how do I get my erection back?
Mm-hmm.
It's a general recognition of health and how do I get my health back?
Right.
We live in a society and you know, function in a healthcare system that really is not delivering healthcare but delivering sick care because you don't go to the doctor unless you're sick. And I think that one of the points of the program is how do we start making that change? How do we start empowering our population, our men, or women, for that matter?
Mm-hmm.
I do a lot for pelvic health and incontinence
right.
in women as well. How do we get them to start making the changes that they need to make to
right.
improve their health versus just taking care of what ails them at the time?
Right. If someone wanted to make an appointment, how would they do that?
They call the office, and I'll give the phone number. It's 908-782-0019. I'll repeat it because that's what we do.
Yep.
908-782-0019. They can ask to speak to – there's three of us there practicing. My name is Dr. Sperling, as mentioned earlier in the talk. I'm available for appointment. I'm accepting new patients. I accept all insurances. And we'll take care of your needs.
That's awesome. Might want to give that phone number again.
Okay, 908-782-0019.
All right, and this Wednesday you're going to have a talk?
So this Wednesday I have a talk, and then Wednesday the 29th I have a talk. So the second Wednesday of the month, which is 15th, and the last Wednesday of the month which is the 29th. Again, this is Men's Health Month. Next year we'll be probably putting together some other programs, but we'll focus on next year. At that time.
Next year. I can't thank you enough, Doctor. It's been wonderful. I think that it's very informative. And I think some of the misconceptions that men have, you've eliminated.
Well, I appreciate that. I appreciate the opportunity to come here and discuss
this with you. I think it's awesome, actually, because, men doesn't – they don't really like to talk about it, you know. But, you know, it's something that they have to talk about, or they should talk about.
They should talk about, yeah.
Right. So this Wednesday. At the Hunter Medical Center. Meeting room A and B, if you go in the main entrance, it's right past admitting.
Correct.
Admitting is on the right. It would be right past
it. 6 to 7 o'clock this Wednesday.
Wednesday at 6:30 to
7:30 on the 29th.
Thank you again, Doctor, and I hope I run into you in the hospital because
right.
I volunteer there on Fridays.
Excellent. Well, hopefully I'll see you there.
That's why I know where A and B is, because I volunteer right there.
Perfect.
By the main gate.
Well, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thank you again. You've been listening to the Hunter Medical Center's Hour, and I'm Larry Cartwright, and same time, same station next week. Enjoy your week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterton at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterton, the voice for mental health in Hunterton County.
USA Radio News with Kelly Svahn.
Even though the Orlando jihadist was an ISIS supporter, the focus of some Democratic politicians has been on gun control. President Obama held another news conference earlier today.
He was able to obtain these weapons legally because he did not have a criminal record that in some ways would prohibit him from purchasing these weapons.
Democratic presidential contender Hillary Clinton is avoiding the issue of radical Islam and is blaming homophobia.
A madman filled with hate, with guns in his hands, and just a